Now we're holding on page Lamed Aleph in Ksubas, the last paragraph, the very end of Ois Tes. The Mishnah had mentioned various things that a person is able to testify about when he's older, about that he remembers something from when he's younger, from when he was before Bar Mitzvah. Usually you can't. A person, for example, were to say that I remember from when I was before Bar Mitzvah, that Reuven lent Shimon money, we wouldn't accept that. But there are a few things where, yes, one of them being the subject of the beginning of this parak, whether a particular woman was married as a besula and now is entitled to a ksuba of 200 or not, and 100, and the Mishnah lists a few other things. So then the Gemara brings a braisa that mentions that one of the things that a person will be believed to testify about when he's older, that he remembers from when he was younger, is that we ate at the ktsatsa of Pliny. So why my ktsatsa? What is a ktsatsa? So the Tana Rabbanan, ketzav ktsatsa, how does ktsatsa work? Echad mina achin shenosa isha she'ena hegenes loy. If one brother from among a family married a woman who's unsuitable for him. So, for example, it's a family of Koyanim, and he married a Grusha or a Halala, or it's a family of Yisraelim, and he married a Mamzeres, or whatever. The point is that now, there's a concern in the future nobody's going to know which one it was, and therefore people are going to think that that entire family is tainted, and that there's a problem with their yichus, and if it's koyanim, it's going to affect their ability to eat truma and so forth. Boin v'nei mishpacha, so the other members of the family come, or mevi'in chobis malei peres, they bring a barrel full of fruit, v'shovrin oisav emtza rechava, and they break that barrel in the middle of the city square. But Omim, and they say, Achinu b'nei Yisrael, our brother is Jewish people. Shmo, listen, Achinu Ploini, our brother by the name of Ploini, Nasi Isha She'ena Genesloi, married a woman who's unsuitable for him according to Halacha, or Misyarin Onu Shalayis Arev Zarev Zareinu, and we are concerned that his descendants might be mixed up with ours, that people might think, again, that they might not know which parts of the family are which, and they're going to think that all of us have a problem. So they say to the people, come and take for yourselves a sample. And actually, dugma literally means a sample, but Rashi says it means an ois, it means a sign for future generations, the Duras, Shaloyis Arab Zarab Zareinu, that his descendants should not be mixed up with ours. So in other words, it was meant to be a big public spectacle, that this way everybody should remember what's what over here. Marsha points out that they would use Paris, which is something that kids enjoy, and kids like Nash. So they're going to come and want to get some. And we know that kids' memories are a lot sharper than adults a lot of times, which is why you have in Pirkei Avos, you have about learning Torah as a child versus an adult. So this way they'll remember it for a long time to come. So this is the ktsatsa that we're talking about, that a child is believed, not when he's still a child, but later on, when he grows up, he's believed to say that years ago, decades ago, I remember how they did the ktsatsa. Marsha brings, so why do we call it ktsatsa? So he says, because an unsuitable man can be called koitzitz. I'm not sure where Marshall finds that. We do find there's a piyut that they say in some kehillas on Shabbos Parshas Zohar in Shachris, the same way as we have piyut in Roshana Yom Kippur. In some kehillas they have them on other special Shabbosim as well. They have a famous one that begins Otz Koitzitz Ben Koitzitz, which refers to Haman, the descendant of Amalek. So maybe that's where Marsha is getting from, that koitzitz means someone unsuitable. Whatever the case, so he says ktsatsa is the feminine form of it, because we're saying this woman was unsuitable to marry into the family. Other mafarshim point out that parshas the word ktsatsa means broken. They break the barrel, and they're showing that he's broken off and cut off from the family. The Yerushalmi, by the way, mentions over here that they would do the same kind of thing also if a person sold his ancestral land. Like this, a person has land in Eretz Yisrael that he inherited from his ancestors, and he shouldn't be selling it back when the Yovel was in effect, and at least he's going to get it back in Yovel most of the time, but after the Yovel ceased to exist, then it would be permanently gone. So they would also do a ktsatsa like that, like to criticize him publicly, why is he doing something like that, why is he alienating land from the family. And then the Yerushalmi also adds, what happens if the guy buys back the land, or what happens if the guy divorces the unsuitable wife, then they would do another ktsatsa in order to make a public announcement. Look, he's undone the wrong thing that he did, and we welcome him, and we welcome him back in. Okay. Next, Elu Nairus Perek Shlishi. The main subject of the Perek is the dinim. The Torah tells us about Oynes and Mefate. Oinus, where a man rapes a girl, and then the Torah tells us that he has to pay a fine, and he has to marry her, provided that she and her father consent, and he's never allowed to divorce her. A mafata is similar, except instead of it being against her will, it's with her consent. There he has to either pay a fine or marry her, and you have various dinim that come in that, and those are basically the subject of the perek. Now, so let's consider like this. Suppose, for example, that the girl that he was onus or mafata was a relative of his, where he would be chayiv kares or missus beistin for having relations with her. So the Gemara establishes that we have a concept called kumle b'dirabaminei, which means that if a person does a single action which makes him chayiv missus beistin as well as a monetary payment, he doesn't pay the monetary payment kumle, he stands with, in other words, he's given b'dirabaminei, the bigger thing, meaning the bigger punishment. So an example of that would be, say, for example, a person kills somebody else and meanwhile rips his clothing in the process. He shoots an arrow at him, for example, and then rips through the guy's clothing and kills him. He's chayiv mister for the killing, so he's potter for payment for the clothing. It's an example of kumle b'dirabaminei. In the Gemara, there's a whole sugya that discusses various other examples of it. As far as relevant to our perek would be, what if the girl that he was onus or mafata is his own daughter? Well, there's a chiyuv missus beistin involved, the Torah tells us. Therefore, it's a classic example of kum lebe d'rabbinei. He would be potter from paying those penalties that the Torah says, because anyway, he's getting a chiyuv missa. What about if it wasn't an issur missus beistin? What if it was something involving kores? So the Chachamim hold that kores is not in the same category. There could be a person could be chayiv kores as well as have to pay. So an example, to give an example, the Gemara gives, let's say, for example, a person were to burn somebody's pile of grain on Shabbos. So again, he's chayiv money to the other guy for burning his grain. He's also chayiv misa for breaking Shabbos, so kum lebe d'rabbaminei. What if he were to do the same thing on Yom Kippur? The Chacham would say he would be chayiv to pay for the grain. He's getting misa, he's getting kores, doesn't matter. So now the Gemara says, Tanya, Rav Nechunya ben Hakana, Hoya Oises, Yom Kippurim k'Shabbos natashlomin. Rav Nechunya Hakana held that Yom Kippur is like Shabbos as far as payment. Meaning, he said that, in other words, Kores is the same as Mrs. Beistin. Ma Shabbos mischai benafshir potim natashlomin. So just like, for example, if he were to break Shabbos and commit a nezek, he would be, he's chayiv for his own life because he's chayiv misa, and therefore he's potter from the payment, because kom lebe d'rabaminei. Afi Yom Kippurim hold the same way he says Yom Kippur, even though it's not Mrs. Beistin, it's Kores. And the same thing the Gemara discusses. So by the same token, for example, suppose the girl wasn't his daughter, suppose it was his sister, where there's no Mrs. Beistin for a brother and sister, but there is Kores. So then the Chachamim would hold he's chayiv to pay the penalty, whereas Rav Nechunya ben Hakana would say he's potter.
Onus is raped. What was the second one?
Mafata is where he seduces her.
Seduces.
Yeah. No, where it's with her consent, yeah. If he gets malchus, he's potter from kores. That's true. But in general, a person doesn't get malchus unless they actually gave him hasura for malchus. Okay. My time is Rav Nechunya ben Hakana. So why does Rav Nechunya ben Hakana hold that kores is like missus beistin in this regard? Amar Abaya. So Abaya says like this. Where do we learn the concept of kum lebe d'rabaminei? So it's like this. The Torah tells us in Parashas Mishpatim, you have a case where two men are fighting, and one of them hits a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry. So the pasuk says he's going to have to pay the husband dmei velodis. He's going to have to pay for the potential value of those babies. Basically, what we do is we figure out how much would the woman be worth. Suppose she were to be sold as a slave woman, how much would she be worth pregnant? Where then the buyer is getting future children in the bargain as well. Versus how much is she worth not pregnant, and the guy pays the difference. And the pasuk says that so they hit her v'lo yiyeh osayin. The pasuk says there's no osayin. Osayin means means death. So then the pasuk says that he pays, but then on the other hand, the pasuk continues v'im osayin yiyeh. If there is an osayin, then v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh. Then there's a life instead of a life. Meaning then it's from there that we learn the concept of kum lebe d'rabaminei. So now Rav Nechunya ben Hakana is going to point out that the word osayin means granted. The word osayin means death, but do we mean death by bidei adam, where a person killed her, or do we mean also bidei shamayim, where a person died naturally? Well, then that's going to affect the question over here. Is a person potter from paying only when there's missus beistin, which is a human-caused death, or is it also when it's kores, which is a death caused directly by Hashem? That's going to be the crux of the machlokas. So my time is Reb Nachoni ben Akana, Amar Abaya, because Reb Nachoni ben Akana holds nema osen bidei odom and nema osen bidei shamayim. Here we have in the pasuk where it says that if there is no osen versus if there is an osen, the nema osen bidei shamayim. We also find on the other hand. When Yaakov is afraid to send Binyamin down to Mitzrayim, and then when Yehuda is arguing with Yosef, why are you trying to keep Binyamin? So they use the word osoin over there, the korohu osoin, that Yaakov is concerned that there may be that there may be four Binyamin and osoin. Now, so there it's Bidei Shamayim, because we're not saying that Yaakov is afraid they're going to kill Binyamin. The Pashas, he's concerned that there are going to be natural disasters or something that might happen, that Binyamin might die on the way. As Rashi says in last week's parasha, Asaf and Matatu B'Shasa Sakana, and his mother died on the road, etc., etc. So therefore, Reb Nachoni ben Akana explains, therefore, based on that, we see that the word also includes not only a human-caused death, such as Mrs. Bastin, but also a death by natural causes, which is Bidei Shamayim. Well, therefore, he says, "Ma osin ha'omer b'dei adam potem mit hashlomen." So just like you chachamim agree that if there's an osin, that if there's a death that's caused b'dei adam, namely if this guy, when he hit the pregnant woman, actually killed her, then he's chayiv misa, and therefore he's potter from payment. That's where we learn the concept of kamle b'dei rabbeinu. Af osin ha'omer b'dei shemayim potem mit hashlomen. Well, then Rabbi Nachman ben Akana says, we see since the same word osin is used in connection with binyamin, where they were talking about misa b'dei shemayim, then therefore it means that the same concept applies as far as the dinim of kamle b'dei rabbeinu, and therefore that yes, if you were to burn down the guy's grain on Yom Kippur, or rape his sister or whatever, then he would be potter from tashlumen because there's kores involved. Okay. Maskus but of Adaba Ava. However, of Adaba Ava asks on that. Mimaidki mazalahu Yaakov Labonov al sinim pachim. Now, how do we know that when Yaakov is warning his children to be careful with Binyamin, I don't want an osoin to befall him on the way, how do we know that Yaakov specifically is warning them about sinim pachim, which means cold and heat? The bidei shemayim ninhu, where those are something that are in Hashem's hands. Dumal al yevaganvi, maybe Yaakov is also warning them. Maybe Yaakov is also warning them about, for example, attacks by lions or by bandits, by thieves. The bidei adam ninhu, which those are bidei adam, those are by human hand. So you're telling me that you're learning from the fact that it says osoin and that includes bidei shemayim, but the word osoin, that what Yaakov is concerned about, what might befall Binyamin, could equally well be things bidei adam. Well, the Gemara asks back, nu, otu Yaakov aho azha aholai hazer, nu, precisely that. Do you think that Yaakov is only afraid that there might be natural disasters and not human-caused disasters? Yaakov aho milay azher. Obviously, when Yaakov is concerned about it, he's concerned about every possibility. When he says osoin, he is including things that are bidei adam, but of necessity, he's also including things that are bidei shamayim as well. So now Marsha asks, so what do you mean? What do you mean warning them? How is he supposed to warn them to be careful of these things? If you have these kinds of oinsim, then how could they possibly protect Binyamin from them? So the answer is that look, a person could be careful not to go in a place where there are known to be wild animals or bandits or whatever. So Yaakov is telling them to be careful of everything. Sinim pachim. Now Rashi over here doesn't explain what sinim pachim is, but in other places Rashi explains, and Rashbam, there's a footnote over here in Rashi that explains that Rashi himself and Rashbam and other places explain that sinim means cold and pachim means heat. Literally, the word pachim means traps or snares, like a pach nishba v'anach nimlotnu. But here it means, in other words, there's an expression in a pasuk that the Gemara is going to quote in a minute. Sinim pachim mederach ikesh, that cold and heat are in the way of the crooked person. In other words, the person has a responsibility to protect himself from those kinds of things. Tosfos discusses that another possibility is sinim pachim may actually be not two separate things, but rather one thing. Sinim, which is cold, namely pachim, which are a trap and a snare for a person. But then Tosfos disagrees with that explanation. So Tosfos points out, now the Gemara is going to mention soon, that Sinim and Pachim are not Bidei Shamayim. They're in a person's hands because a person has the ability to save himself from the heat and the cold. He can dress appropriately. Tosfos brings in this connection from a... There are other Gemaras that say that Hashem will save you from these things, but fine, that can mean that Hashem will make, for example, that Hashem will make the weather be nicer so you don't need the appropriate clothing, for example. So Hashem, instead of it being cold and you have to bundle up, Hashem will give you a bracha that it'll be warmer and you won't have to, or vice versa. If it's going to be too hot, then Hashem will give a bracha that it'll be cooler weather and you won't, Tosfos brings in this connection from a Medrash where Abzaninus asks Rebbe, daven for me. So Rebbe says, may Hashem save you from the cold. And Abzaninus says, what kind of tefillah is that? You don't need to daven for somebody to be protected from the cold. They'll put on another layer. So Rebbe says, fine, then Hashem should protect you from the heat. Oh, Abzaninus says, that's a bracha, that's a tefillah. Because yeah, when you have it too hot, what are you going to do? There's only so much you can take off. So the point is, though, that here the Gemara was bothered by that Yaakov maybe was warning them particularly about things Bidei Adam, but the answer is no. He's mentioning both things, Bidei Shamayim and things that are Bidei Adam. So Eitz Yosef discusses in some detail over here that once Yehuda, now Yaakov had reason to suspect Yehuda out of all the brothers of having killed Yosef. He knew Yosef had disappeared. He didn't know what happened to him, but he knew that Yehuda, being the leader of the brothers, if anything actually happened to Yosef, if he was actually killed, it's likely he figured that Yehuda had a hand in it. Thus we have in this week's parasha, when Yaakov is given the brachas, and he says to Yehuda, Miteref bni Olisa, you, my son, went up from the prey. One meaning of it is that I thought that you had killed my son Yosef, and it turns out that you did not, because we see Yosef is alive and well. So you cleared yourself of that suspicion. Anyway, so now, though, when Yehuda is taking responsibility for Binyamin, then Yaakov knows good and well that Yehuda is not going to try to harm Binyamin. So he doesn't really have to warn him about things Bidei Adam. Primarily, he's warning him about things Bidei Shemayim, things that might be beyond Yehuda's control. But nevertheless, he's telling him that you have a responsibility to make sure that you... So first, the Gemara had said that he's warning him only about things like cold and heat. So then you have a responsibility to make sure when you're traveling that Binyamin is appropriately bundled up, or that you don't go in places that are too hot where it might be bad for his health or whatever. But now the Gemara is pointing out that he's also telling him you also have a responsibility to make sure that there won't be any problems, Bidei Adam either, to make sure to stay away from places where there might be lions or bandits or what have you. So the Gemara asks, "Sinim pacham bidei shemayim linhu?" So you're telling me that being saved from cold or heat is bidei shemayim? V'hatanya kol bidei shemayim chutz mitzinim pachim. Don't we learn in a brisa that everything is in Hashem's hands except for tzinim pachim, except for cold and heat? The shenema, as the pasuk says, "Tzinim pacham b'derech ikish." Cold and heat are in the path of the crooked person, the stubborn person. Shomer nafsho yuchat mehem, the person who watches life will stay away from them. So in other words, Hashem does make it cold or hot, but it's a person's responsibility to make sure not to be out in the cold without proper clothing, or to be out in the heat without taking proper precautions or whatever. So how can you call that Bidei Shamayim when it's actually Bidei Adam? Tosfos points out, by the way, that we have the famous expression, Akol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Miyiras Shamayim, whereas here we're saying, Akol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Mitzinim Pachim. The difference is, Tosfos says, here we're talking about the events that happen to a person through his lifetime. Those, all of them, Hashem controls, except for Tzinim Pachim, a person who is responsible for himself to take the appropriate precautions because of the weather. There, the Gemara is talking about what was Nigzar on a person before he's born. As we know, that a malach brings the fertilized embryo in front of Hashem and asks what's going to be with it, and Hashem determines he's going to be rich or poor, he's going to be smart or dumb, etc., except for the hot tzaddik b'dasha, like karma, as the Alter Rebbe brings on the first page of Tanya, that Hashem leaves a person b'chiro chafshis. So the true Aryeh v'Ganvi v'Dei Adam Ninhu. Also, on the other hand, you're telling me that attacks by lions or attacks by bandits are called b'Dei Adam. Those are not under the direct control of Hashem. V'ha'amar Rabbi Yosef, but didn't Rabbi Yosef say v'chein toni Rabbi Chiya? And so also the Priya taught, Miyom Shechora Beis Hamikdash, ever since the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, Afal Pi Shebatlu Sanhedrin, even though the Sanhedrin has ceased to exist, or to be exact, the Sanhedrin has ceased to judge Dinei Nefashos, Dalad Misses Le Batlu. Nevertheless, the four Misses based in are not Batlu. They still continue to exist. So the Masechta means Le Batlu. Habatlu. The fact is they don't exist. You don't have a based in ever since the Churban that ever judges Dinei Nefashos. What it means is the judgment of the Dalad Misses has not ceased. That still continues to be. Hashem still arranges that a person who is chai of one of these things ends up suffering the appropriate death. By the way, Tosfos points out, it's not printed here in any Akron, but Tosfos in the Gemara points out that actually the Gemara tells us in a couple of places that the Sanhedrin left the Lishkas HaGozis 40 years before the Churban. And they stopped judging Dinei Nefashos. So why are we saying since the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed? We should say since 40 years before the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. And Tosfos says because even during those 40 years, sometimes they would come back to the Lishkas HaGozis for a special session to judge a case of Dinei Nefashos. So therefore you can't say that it was completely bottled because occasionally you would have during those years when they would do that. Not for Tosfos goes on to say, not for cases of murder, but for other cases, for other cases of Mrs. Basin, as opposed to after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. The Sanhedrin can judge Dinei Nefashos only when they're located in the Lishkas HaGozis. Once the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, no more Lishkas HaGozis, therefore no more Dalad Misses. But nevertheless, we're saying the judgments of Hashem, according to the Dalad Misses, still continue to exist. And the idea is Midah Keneged Midah. As we know, Hashem rewards and punishes Midah Keneged Midah, and the idea is that this way it should make people realize that Hashem is still running the world. Mishnah Chayev Skila. So a person who is Chayev Skila, now how does Skila done? The Mishnah, tell us in Sanhedrin, first person is pushed off a platform or a cliff twice his height, and he falls on the hard ground, and if that doesn't kill him, then they throw a big rock on him. So, I know from an agag, so a person is chayev skila. Either he falls off a roof, or an animal tramples him. So an animal knocks him down and kills him by stamping on him, which would be similar to skila. Mishnah is chayev sleifa. A person who is chayev sleifa. I know from now sleifa. Consisted of the actual sleifa wasn't burning him at the stake. It would mean that they would pour hot lead down his throat. It was sort of he was burnt internally. So oynofa b'dleika, either he falls into a fire and he's completely burnt, oynochash makisho, or snake bites him and the venom burns him from the inside. Mishnah Chayv Hariga, a person who is Chayv Hereg, which involves having the head chopped off, or Nimsa L'Malchus, either it gets handed over to the Roman government and they would execute people by beheading them, or Listin Voynolov, or he's attacked by robbers where also they would kill him with swords. Or Mishnah Chayv Chenek, a person who is Chayv Chenek, which would involve that they would strangle him, or Tevea Banahar, either he drowns in a river and asphyxiates and is unable to breathe, or Mesbis Srunchi, or he dies of Srunchi, which is Rashi defines it as otherwise known in the Gemara as Askara. It's a throat disease. Nowadays it's often translated as diphtheria. The French word that Rashi uses has also been translated as a type of swelling in the throat. Whatever it is, it's some kind of thing where it basically blocks off a person's airway and he chokes. So therefore that's the equivalent of chenek. The point being, in other words, so we see that, and so now we had over here a chayah dersatay, that a wild animal trampling the guy, which is an example of a lion, or listim boin olav, and both of those things we said before, abidei odam, and here we see on the contrary, the abidei shamayim, Hashem arranges that the lion or the listim should come and attack him because he's chayah of one of the dalad misses based in. Now, Tosfos asks the question that, first of all, Tosfos asks the question, we have other examples in the Gemara where a person seemed to get a different punishment than he would be supposed to according to these things, but fine, there Tosfos gives an answer. But then the real question is that we sometimes have people who worship Avodah Zarah and do other terrible Averis and they die peacefully. So Tosfos says, listen, first of all, they could do tshuva. Or they have other mice in Tarivim, or they have some schus that Hashem therefore rewards them in their lifetime. Here, for example, everybody was talking about, for example, Carter just died, and everybody's talking about the reward that Eibishter gave him of a long life for the couple of good things that he did, and now he can get his punishment in the Olam Amos. Anyway, so you have that. And then Tosfos goes on with a couple of those. So Tosfos says, yeah, first of all, he could do tshuva. Hashem could be moichel him completely. He could have his schus. And then, yeah, Marshall mentions, aside from that, also you can have that vice versa. Also, you have that sometimes you have tzaddikim who were punished with, who were not punished, who were killed with all kinds of misses and mishunas, some of which are in this list over here. So again, the idea is, as we know, the idea is that this way they cleans up the few averas to the zeichel olam haba. There's actually an interesting explanation that says almost the opposite of what Tosfos is saying. Here, Tosfos is saying that a person did tshuva, so therefore Hashem might forego that punishment, and he's not going to get that punishment in this world, and there's actually an explanation the other way around. There may be that fakirut, when the person does tshuva, then the Eibishter will bring one of these things on him in order to completely clean up the Aveira in this world. Because after all, that's how it works with Mrs. Basin. The person does tshuva, and he says vidui, and then his Mrs. Basin is the rest of his kapara. So the same thing over here. A person does tshuva, then the Eibishter taka might bring that he falls off the roof or gets trampled by the lion or whatever in order to completely clean up the Aveira, and that way he doesn't have to be punished, and that way he doesn't have to be punished in Gehenna. Anyway, the point is that the Gemara said that, so you see, therefore, that listim or that robbers or lions can be classified as bidei adam, bidei shamayim. They're classified as things that Hashem directly brings about because a person deserved it. So the Gemara says, hey, well, fine, you have to flip it around. Out of Gan Bidei Shemayim, to be attacked by lions or by bandits is Bidei Shemayim. Sinim Pachem, Bidei Adam. But, as we said, cold and heat is in a person's hand because a person has a responsibility to make sure to stay out of the cold and heat. Hashem controls the weather, but a person is responsible for dressing appropriately and staying out of the heat and so forth. There's a very well-known story in this regard that I think I've told in this year before, I don't remember, where a story involving the famous Goyen Rabbi Chezkel Abramsky. He was a rav in Russia in the years before and after the Russian Revolution. He was one of the important rabbonim over there. There was a period of time when they considered him for the Rosh Hashiva of Tzemach HaTzemim. Anyway, he had a connection. He was a big goyin and had a connection with the Rebbe Rashab and the Friedrich Rebbe. Anyway, in Russia, eventually, like many other rabbonim there, the Russians arrested him and sent him off to Siberia. And in Siberia over there, it's freezing cold and they're not giving the prisoners decent clothing. So he turns to the Eibishter and says, you know, you have this Gemara about Sinim Pachem Bederech Ikish, but he says, you know, Bamed Varnam Amurim, when a person has the ability to wear proper clothing, and he doesn't, then he can be held responsible that he becomes sick because of the cold. But me, I don't have that option, therefore it has to be like everything else in life, where it's up to you, Hashem, to protect me. And they say he was in Siberia for 3 years. It was finally, there was a whole international outcry, and the Russians were finally forced to release him. He had been 3 years in Siberia. They say during all that time, not once did he even catch a cold, even though many other people were partially dying from the cold. But he trusted in the Eibishter based on what he said to the Eibishter based on the Gemara, and the Eibishter followed through. Anyway.
That's it.
It is Mida Kenegan Mida. Each one of them. Yeah.
What's the point? If the person's dead, or should other
people? The point is that other people should. First of all, the person himself could realize as he's dying from the fall or from the lion or whatever. He himself should realize. But yeah, other people should realize as well. Yeah. Yeah. So the first part of the parak continues with these dinim of ones and mafata, and then afterwards in the middle of the parak it talks a little bit about the dinim of motzi shemra. So the Torah tells us a case where a husband comes to Beis Din. We touched on at the beginning of the Masechta, you can have a case where a husband comes to Beis Din and says that his wife is not a besula. Now you can have, he says she's not a besula because not necessarily does that involve that he's saying that she's chayav misa. He's just saying that she was Mizana. He could be claiming that she was Mizana before we ever did the Kiddushin. He could say that there was an injury, whatever, different cases like that. Now you have Moitzi Shemraz, where he's actually coming to Beis Din and claims that he has evidence, that he has Edim, that his wife was actually Mizana after he was Mekadisher. Now, after he's Mekadisher, she's an Eishes Ish. If it turns out to be true, she'd be Chayav Misa.
What's the title of Nispatza?
Nispatza means that she was convinced, that she was seduced. So I'm saying, the beginning of the parak continues talking about the cases of seduction, but now the middle of the parak talks about the dinim of Moitzi Shemra, and the next piece is going to refer to that. So I'm just giving an introduction to explain what the case of Moitzi Shemra is. The Torah tells us in Parshas Kitzetze that a husband comes to Beis Din, he claims that he found his wife was not a basula, and he says, when I started checking into it, I found Edim that she actually committed Znus after I was Mekadisher, while she was in Arusa. If true, then she's Chayav Misa. And if true, the Pasuk says that she gets Skila. Usually an Eishes Ish commits his Nus, she's Chayav only Chenech, which is a lesser punishment, but here she's a Naira Moirasa, she's Chayav Skila. Anyway, what happens if it was not true? What happens if the husband's Edim turn out to be false Edim? Then the Pasuk says The husband gets malchus. He has to pay his wife's father a fine, and he has to stay married to her and never divorce her. So the middle of the parak talks, just spends a couple of blocks talking about those dinim.
If the woman agrees.
If she agrees to stay married to him, right. Okay, so... Now, we have a rule in Torah called Ein Oinshin Elim Kein Mazhirin. If you're going to have something that the Torah gives a penalty for doing such and such, or for not doing such and such, it has to be that somewhere there was a warning in the Torah, don't do this. So now, as Hora L'Moisi Shemra Menolon. So now, we have a punishment that the Torah says for the Moisi Shemra, that again, if it turns out that the Edom were false, then he's getting Malchus and he's paying a fine, etc. But in order to give him Malchus, there has to be somewhere in the Torah a law, do not do this. So where is the warning, do not be Moitzi Shemra? Rabbi Elazar Amar Miloy Sevach Rachel. So Rabbi Elazar says, so the pasuk says, don't be a Rachel, which means a gossiper, a talebearer. That's one of the Isurim in the Torah that has to do with Lashon Hara. So it's the primary Isur in the Torah about Lashon Hara. So here, where he's being Moitzi Shemra and his wife, and he's being over on that. Rab Nosson says a different source. The pasuk says, "Mi v'nishmarta mikol davar ra." The pasuk says you should stay away from any bad thing. From any davar also means a word. From any bad word, so you shouldn't say any bad word. And that includes lashon hara. Rashi points out whenever it says v'nishmarta, whenever it says a lashon of hishomer or several other expressions, then it means a loisa. So v'nishmarta is a warning: be careful, do not say a davar ra, bad word, meaning lashon hara. The Chofetz Chaim, by the way, when he talks about at the beginning of his sefer, when he talks about how severe lashon hara is, he mentions altogether. If you go throughout the Torah, you can find altogether. He says I think like 17 mitzvahs esed, 14 loisas esed, maybe the other way around. I don't remember that a person is over when he speaks lashon hara. These are among them, and there are many others. If it's specifically against a ger, if it's specifically certain kinds of lashon hara, etc. Anyway. So for Rabbi Elazar, my time like Omer Mehai. So why doesn't Rabbi Elazar accept Rabbi Nosson's view that we learn it from Nishmaut to Mikol Dabar Ra? Why does he have to find a different pasuk? The answer is Ahumi Boile L'Chidur Pinchas Ben Yor, because he says that that pasuk from Nishmaut to Mikol Dabar Ra is teaching us a different thing. It's teaching us what Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yor says. Which is Reb Pinchas Ben Yair, when the pasuk says Nishmar to Mikol Davar Ra, Mikan Omer Reb Pinchas Ben Yair, based on that pasuk, Reb Pinchas Ben Yair explained, means Al Yahar Her Odem Bayoyim, a person should not be thinking thoughts of erva, thoughts of znus by day, V'yavili De Tuma Balayla, which will cause him to become Tomei, to become a Balkeri by night. Because the pasuk continues over there. After it says Nishmar to Mikol Davar Ra, it continues that if you have a person who is a Balkeri and he's in the army camp, then he has to go out of the camp, and he has to stay out until nightfall because a Balkeri is not allowed in Machne Yisrael. There's a Toivon and he's head of Shemesh, and then he's allowed back in. So therefore, the Pinchas Ben Yair explains, in other words, that the Vinishmartim, we call Dabar Ra, is be careful of the kind of thing that would lead to being Tohar, to being Tomei, by being a Balkeri, namely thoughts, namely Hirhurim of Znus and whatnot. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar says we need the pasuk Vinishmartim, we call Dabar Ra, for that. Rather than to teach us about the issur of a husband saying lashon hara about his wife.
Yeah, in case you had a problem during the day, we say the
Kriya Shema Alamita. But, we also say, yeah, we say the Rebbeinu Shel Olam over there, yeah. Yeah. But Rebbeinu Shel Olam Mehai, Rebbeinu Shel Olam Hirsch, by the way, has an interesting explanation about it. He points out, so of all the context where the Torah is talking about this, when Yishmar to Mekol Dabar Ra, and when the person is Balkeri, it's talking about when the Jewish army is going to war. Why, of all places, is it mentioned in that context? He says because you often find, in armies, you often find there's a laxness in morals. People figure we're in the army, we can do whatever we want, and rapes and such kind of things are very, very common. So therefore, specifically, in this case, the Torah is warning you don't do that. Anyway. So, but I'm not in my time, Omer Mehai. Why doesn't I'm not accept that you should learn from Leiselech Rochel? And the answer is, Ahu az horol abesin, shalo yeh rach lozeh v'kosha lozeh. Because he says the word Leiselech Rochel has a different meaning. It doesn't mean necessarily don't be a Baal Lashon Hara. It means it's a warning to Beis Din, and the psukim before Leiselech Rochel are indeed talking about instructions to Beis Din to be fair in judgment and so forth. So he says Rochel is short for rach li, which means gentle to me. So a Beis Din is not allowed to be gentle to one of the Bali Dinim and harsh to the other. So they can't, for example, let one of them talk at length, and then the other one, you say, they tell them, make it snappy, that kind of thing. So Rav Nosson holds that the words like Selach Rachel are warning to Beis Din about that, and they have nothing necessarily to do with saying Lashon Hara. Therefore, he has to learn the Azhara, the warning to the husband to not engage in Lashon Hara about his wife. He has to learn from the Pasuk Nishmarta Mekol Davar. Further on, it starts talking about, now Masechet Ksubos talks about the Ksuba itself, but you also have, together with the Ksuba, you have a bunch of things called Tnoi Ksuba. You have various conditions that there are certain things that the husband owes his wife. Three of them are mentioned in the Torah, and then there are a few more Dirabanan. And then you have things that the wife owes her husband. Those are all Tnoi Ksuba. They're all conditions that go along with the Ksuba. So among others, so the Mishnah mentions that the husband has a responsibility to support his wife. He doesn't necessarily have a responsibility to the same degree to support his children. That's not part of the Tnoi Ksuba. However, the Gemara points, first let's deal with like this. That's the children is the next thing, actually. The Torah lists three obligations of a husband to his wife. The context the Torah mentions it is when you have an Oma Hevriya, you have a Jewish maidservant, where her master or her master's son marries her, and she becomes a full-fledged wife, so the Torah warns him, even if he marries another wife together with her, before Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom, nevertheless, he shouldn't think that this former Oma is a second-class wife. He has to be careful not to deny her She'era, Ksusa, and Einosa. So now we're going to define what those three things are. So those are the three chiyuvim of the husband to his wife, Minat Torah. So Tanya, She'era, Eva Mazonis. We learn in a Braisa, the word She'era refers to food. So he's not allowed to deprive her of the appropriate amount of food. And where do we see? The word she'er means food. V'chein ho'omer, as you have a pasuk where the Navi criticizes the rich people, the corrupt judges or whatever, v'asher ochu she'er ami, where they eat up the she'er of my people. So the Gemara is understanding that it's saying like they're eating up their food and not leaving them with any resources. Mephoshim on the pasuk explained that she'er literally means flesh, so it means like they're as if they're eating their flesh away, but whatever. The point is that the word she'er can mean food. Ksusa kamashma, ksusa means exactly what it sounds like. Ksus means clothing, so he's not allowed to deny her the appropriate amount of clothing. Later in the Masechta, the Mishnah and the Gemara deal in detail what's the minimum amount of food, what's the minimum amount of clothing, etc. Oinosa zu oina ha'amur b'Torah. When it says you shouldn't diminish her oinosa, that means the oina that it says in the Torah. Each kind of person it talks about later in the Masechta, depending on his circumstances, depending how often he's in town versus out of town, depending what kind of work he's doing, etc. Then he has a different oina. There's a different schedule where he's expected to be available to be intimate with his wife. So therefore, so he's not allowed to diminish that. He's not allowed to withhold that from her unnecessarily. Where do we see the word oina means that? V'cheinu oima im ta'anes b'noisai. As we find, Lavan warns Yaakov that you are going to have to swear that you will not ta'ana my daughters. Now, literally, the word ta'ana means to afflict. So what does it mean? In other words, it's not like Lavan is not afraid that Yaakov is going to beat his wives or other things like that. It means, in other words, that Lavan is concerned that he might withhold their tashmish. After all, Yaakov has four wives. There's only so much of him to go around, so therefore Lavan warns him, I don't want you to marry any other wives. I don't want you to diminish my daughters, the time of tashmish for my daughters. The Gemara, in fact, in Yuma, in fact, learns from this is where we have the Torah tells us by Yom Kippur, Ta'anu v'snafshei seichem, you have to afflict yourselves, but the Torah doesn't spell out what the affliction is, and we know there are five things that are also on Yom Kippur, one of them being Tashmish Amitta. The Gemara learns from this. Ta'ana means, in other words, something that if you withhold it from them, they will feel inui. So therefore we see that oinosa means something, means that, it means Tashmish, and therefore it means the husband is responsible to make sure to provide his wife with the appropriate amount of that. So those are the three definitions. Rabbi Lozo Oimer. Rabbi Lozo, on the other hand, flips around two of the definitions. He says, She'era zu oina. No, the other way around. She'era means the oina, because the word she'er also means flesh. The Pasuk says that no person should approach the relatives that are of his own flesh to commit incest, so we see that she'er means having relations. So therefore, she'er means the relations that the husband and wife are supposed to have. Ksusa k'mashma, ksusa means clothing, oinosa eilu mezonis, and oinosa, on the other hand, means her food, v'cheinu omer v'ya'ancha v'yari v'echa. As we find, Moshe says to the Jewish people, Hashem afflicted you, and he made you be hungry, and then he gave you the man. So we, again, the Gemara in Yuma brings out, that's another thing, how do we know that you're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur? Same thing, since it's ta'anu asnafshe seichem, and we see here that a lack of food is called inui. So therefore, Sir Belazar is saying that what the Braisa had said, that She'era is food, and Oinosa means relations, Rabbalazar says the other way around. She'era is relations, Oinosa is food. But they both agree that Susa means her clothing. Yom Yom Mashiach Ba'ula, Hey Tevis, Didan Notza. So they've ever talked about in a sikha, the last Hey Tevis that they ever gave a sikha in Tavshin Nun Beis, the mitzvah, Pidyon Shvuyim, on Hey Tevis, so you have mitzvah, Gereres mitzvah. So that brings about the complete Pidyon Shvuyim that Hashem will do, the redemption of the whole Jewish people and all of Torah and everything else from Golus to the Gola Mitzvah Shleiman. And then the Rebbe adds that this concept of Pidyon Shvuyim and the connection of it to the Gola is actually especially noticeable when it comes to Pidyon Shvuyim Sfarim. Because the Gola has to do with elevating and refining and redeeming all the sparks of Kedusha that are scattered everywhere in the world, that are in captivity everywhere in the world. Now, everything in the world begins with Torah, Stachel Bar Eiso Bar Alma. Therefore, the koyach to refine all those sparks comes from something in Torah. And the analog in Torah, Pinyon Shvuyim, therefore, is when you have things of Torah that are in captivity and then they're taken out of it. So therefore, that's a Pinyon Shvuyim. And from that comes the Pinyon Shvuyim of the sparks of Kedusha and then of the Jewish people at large. Yeah, that's what. Yeah, that was the context. Yeah. So here, but then we're talking 5 years after that. But yeah. Okay. Continuing on halachas, we were in the middle of talking about bosses for dover also. We have something that was placed on a mukta item that was placed on top of something else before Shabbos, and we talked about the various criteria that are needed for it to be a bosses for dover also. So a bosses for davar aser would be only if only if you put it there b'kavana that it should be there bein hashmashes. If it was there because you forgot it over there or it fell over there, then it wouldn't become a bosses. However, the Alter Rebbe says that if you could shake it off, then you need to do that. Then it can only be your keli. If you put something mukta on top of someone else's keli, then it doesn't become a bosses for davar aser because you have a concept called ein adam oser davar she'ena shaloi. You can't make somebody else's item oser where the other person doesn't appreciate it. Where the other person doesn't mind, then you do have the ability to. But when he would mind if you made his item mukta by making it a bosses for davar aser, and therefore you're placing a mukta item on top of his does not make it a bosses.
On Hanukkah, you have a chair, then you put even now or not. Then they say you have to put like a station that you're going to use so that you can move the whole thing.
That way you can move the whole thing, exactly.
Yeah, but the point is that my menorah is going to fall over. It's almost, it's a big silver one. It's going to fall over. Well,
then you may not be able to move it because you can't move the mukta itself. We're talking about where the table or whatever is sturdy enough, or the menorah is sturdy enough that it won't fall over when
you... You need to put a book there. You could just put some wine or something in there.
Something important. The point is, yeah, it said earlier in the simon, something important, something that you're going to use on Shabbos, and that has a certain importance to you greater than the mukta item. Yeah. Yes.